Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast to the Arts Show, where we celebrate books, music, visual, and the performing arts.
There are quite a few stories about your background.
Okay. Would you like some of the wilder ones?
Gavin said we gotta go see this girl, Judy Sill. I said, what's she like? And he said, she's like nobody else.
She was the first artist signed to Asylum Records, and Geffen had tremendous belief in her.
He said, what do you want to do? And I said, I wanted to be the greatest living songwriter in the world.
I heard the song, and it was very intriguing because I thought it could be a hit.
We liked each other's songs. You know, like I love Jackson's songs that he wrote, and I love JD's songs, but everybody seemed to think that Judy had something special.
When I met her, she told me she was a heroin addict, that she'd been a prostitute, and that she'd been in jail. So that's a lot of information.
She had pointed the gun at the guy and said, okay, mother sticker, this is a fuck up.
I knew that I had to clean up or else go back to jail. So I got a tattoo in my arm to remind me forever. And then I started formulating exactly what my mission would be.
This is The Kiss by Judy Sill.
I had never heard a song about that. It just felt like a bottomless well.
Love rising from the mist. Promise me this and only this. Holy.
It's like a level of desperation and vulnerability that totally transcends a lot of the real personal songwriting that was going on at the time.
There just wasn't and won't be anybody that writes like that. I've never heard anything that's made me go, oh, that sounds like Judy Sill.
I want to inspire people and uplift them without them knowing it. That's what I want to do.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio, everybody. Today we're going to talk about the documentary that comes out on April 12th. It is called Lost Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill. It's in theaters and on Amazon and Apple TV April 12th, so you want to check that out. We're very excited to have the filmmakers Andy Brown and Brian Lindstrom join us on the show to give us a little bit of insight to whet your appetite to go and see this and learn more about this incredible songwriter and musician and like this angelic voice, Judy Sill. So welcome, Andy. How are you?
Very good. Thank you, Lisa. Nice to be here.
Hey, good to have you here. And welcome, Brian. How are you?
I'm great, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
Now, Brian, you've got a background of documentaries. And Andy, I know you're a filmmaker, but this is kind of your first documentary, right?
That is true, yes. And I was fortunate to work with Brian, who had some documentary chops, and hopefully I was a quick learner, Brian, but I really now am focused more on doing documentaries myself because it was such a wonderful experience.
Well, there was something very film-esque into it. And I think the way you did it with the narration, like you really felt like you were reading Judy's diary. You know, I just felt like I was in her world, in her bubble, like hearing her voice. And the animation, which I've talked to with some other filmmakers, how the role of animation really allows people to transport in time and fills those gaps when someone has passed on. Because she died really young. Wasn't it like 35 she passed away?
Yeah, 1979, an unintentional overdose.
Oh,
and man. We knew we wanted to make as much as possible a first-person film, you know, to really have the audience kind of in Judy's head and understand who she was. And we were very fortunate to, like 4 years into the project, track down an actual audio tape of an interview that the great journalist Chris Van Ness did with Judy in 1972. And that became the kind of narrative spine of our film and really allowed us to use Judy, you know, as she tells her story.
Wow. Wow. And her story is like complex. You think about, you know, the religious side with their, you know, attachment to God, yet here I'm going to go over here and take heroin. You know, it's like this, it's quite a story from her as a young woman going and how she got into music and the gospel side. I laughed at one part of it where you were talking about how she was, it's Baroque was part of it as well, because you can hear it, you know. She didn't really have limits other than I think she really wanted to achieve perfection in her music. Would you guys say that?
She wanted to be the best. Her sound, Her sound is often identified with the Laurel Canyon sound and the label mates at Asylum, but it was really, the influences were very different. I mean, she said her main influences were Bach, Pythagoras, and Ray Charles. And she was painting on, a much different canvas, a wider musical canvas than a lot of her contemporaries. And it was very unique. And I think it adds to the timeless quality that her music has. So once we were able, because as Brian said, we wanted to be able to tell her story in her own voice, have her tell her own story, getting that tape of her giving an oral history of her life up to 1972 allowed us to do that. And then we, around that same time, were able to get her journals and drawings. And those journals started around 1973 and continued to the end of her life. So we could construct a voiceover from them, those journals, which we have a voiceover actress read, so that Judy is basically narrating her entire life. Also, though, in those journals were her drawings, and those are in the film, and those became the basis of the animation aesthetic. And lastly, we got the multi-tracks for her second album, Hard Food, her masterpiece. And so she, in a sense, is scoring the film as well, because we're using those multi-tracks as soundtrack.
Wow. So she would be happy. I think she
would. Well, that was the goal.
We hope so.
otherwise you're going to get haunted.
So true. You're right.
I think she would. Brian, tell us a little bit about how you stumbled into her music and her story, or was it a stumble? How did, because I know a lot of musicians are, you've got so many music greats inside this recording, this movie documentary, everywhere from David Geffen to, Sean Colvin and, Graham Nash, you've got so many people in there. So, because she really was revered by them.
Oh, she was. And like so many people, Andy and I were drawn into Judy by watching her performance of The Kiss on the Old Grey Whistle Test.
Oh, I love that.
And that, is just mesmerizing. And the more we dug into her personal story, it at first seemed sort of incredibly at odds with the majesty of her music. But as we really came to understand it, it was completely of a piece. And I think that's what's so compelling about Judy as a person and as an artist, is that she was definitely impacted by childhood trauma. She suffered sexual abuse at the hands of her stepfather. And I think that her efforts to kind of come to peace with that and deal with that, really informed her music. And I think music indeed was a salvation for Judy. And I think that's what motivated her to write these songs, in hopes that other people might experience the same kind of redemption that she did.
Mm. They're multi-layered. I don't think they're just a one-time listen. And I think that's what musicians get hooked into even more, is like, wow, how far did she go? I mean, just even where she was looking at things mathematically, we always, as a listener, forget math is a huge part of music, right? So that was something really special to watch, that process.
She was very schooled in that, and it informed her work. And she saw that the perfection of math as being connected to God. And so she felt that she was being channeling God was, in some sense she was channeling God in creating her music. And I think that quest for spirituality that continued throughout her life, that I'm not sure she ever really found, was very much a part of her creating, was about giving herself some inner peace, but it was very much about creating her work as well.
She also was like a business person, like creating a business plan. Like, that was my first thing. I was like, man, she was a masterminder. She was like, okay, we got to make a plan to make something happen, whether it was, I need to make a score or the other score,
Yeah.
It was very methodical, the process. And I mean, not dissimilar to making a film, it's very, you just try different things. You try everything, you try different combinations, and there's this sort of methodical process, but the imagination, of course, is, of which he had a wonderful imagination, is the other component. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, able to combine those two very well.
Well, thinking about, you know, where it's that connection between filmmaking and music, which they do go, one's like the visual and, you know, one's the audio, right? Did each of you gain something, learn something through this process of making this film and learning more about her? Did it change you artistically in any way or inspire you creatively? That was a new word, creativity.
Oh, absolutely. And I also think just on a kind of personal psychological level, one of the things that really compels me just to love Judy is you have to kind of come to grips with how she died, you know? And I found that possibly because my familial history of addiction and alcoholism, when we started the project, I sort of had a kind of almost judgmental, like, oh, that's too bad she was an addict kind of thing. And one thing this project just hit home to me so profoundly was that addiction is a disease, and that Judy, you know, was dealing with all this at a time when terms like childhood trauma and recovery weren't even in the vernacular. And even though she had done this kind of heroic job of building a loving community around her of dear friends that was kind of like the family she created, in many ways, because of what she was dealing with, she was very alone. And, you know, imagine if she had lived today, and when we have such a deeper understanding of these traumas, you know, maybe things could have turned out differently. But, you know, I think what she says to me is, as she sings in the song Loping Along Through the Cosmos that ends the film, however we are is okay. You know, I think she came to a kind of acceptance of the traumas that she dealt with and also of the beauty that she brought into the world.
Mm, yeah. And I think her dad, really, that also losing her biological dad, her father, was hard. And I think also being a woman at that time was not the same, even though there was a lot of, you know, Linda Ronstadt and, you know, there was women, you know, Joni Mitchell, well, she kind of got tired of being compared to her, right? But women had to really fight a little bit more than now, but well, let's not go there.
As J.D. Souther said, she was not really able to play that game. She was all sharp elbows. And that was sort of one of the wonderful things about her personality. She was just brutally honest, but as much about herself as anybody else. And I think that is what, in some ways, when you listen to her music, you can sense that she's been through it and she's singing from what she experienced. Even though it's not directly referencing those experiences, it's actually trying to transcend them, but you're sensing that this is somebody who's been through it.
Did she move you, her story?
Oh my goodness, for sure. And still does. I think about Judy every day. And you're getting back to your question about how it's affected whatever, you know, trajectory. Future is, I thank her every day for making me want to work in music and combining music and film. And I attribute that to her. And I wish I had figured that out earlier in life, but that's just the way it is. And you know,
hey, it's never too late.
Make up for lost time. I'm going to try, you know.
Right on. Well, thank you both for making it and everybody involved. Everyone, again, the documentary is Lost Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill. Go watch it. You can get it online again, April 12th in theaters, online on Amazon and Apple TV, everything starting April 12th. And April 12th, you're going to be in LA. Is it the 12th or am I getting the right date?
Yep, April 12th.
Okay, so there's an opening there, and you've got Graham Parsons.
And New York City as well, the IFC Center, starting the 12th.
All right. So, and everyone can follow on social media, too, to find out all the opening dates.
Judy Sill Doc on Instagram. Brian, what's...
And Twitter. You're on Twitter, too.
Lost Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill on Facebook.
Cool. So, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Lisa.
Take care.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Big Blend Radio's Toast to the Art Show. Please keep up with us at bigblendradio.com and keep up with Big Blend magazines at blendradioandtv.com.